not only the rose, it's the rot sitting in the parking lot of my apartment. Dandelion seeds look like ash spiraling in the stirring up the dust. The dust. It's not only my flesh, it's the empty space that I used to fill. And what does it mean to decay, to languish and be tender as a green stem blocked prematurely, as a petal torn from the body? Yeah. How beautiful the wish that lies between fingertips, while God is stirring up the
Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into living with FSHD. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and I'm on the journey with you. Having FSHD, I understand the challenges it brings to patients and their families. We're in this together, and this podcast is a space where we swap stories, share advice, and talk to experts to get the latest news. There's plenty to say about living with FSH muscular dystrophy, so let's get straight to it. Welcome to another episode of FSHD Straight Talk. I am your host, Tim Hollenbach, and today we have a musical guest that's going to be on. There'll also be a little bit of performance that Anne of the FSHD site, who does all our wonderful editing on this show, is going to hopefully slip in there as well, and you can enjoy some of this music. It's going to be Gracie Caggiano, that's going to be on the show today. She comes originally from Florida and then moved into the Kansas City area where she went to grad school, and it's kind of made her life there. And as she has performed music and created more music, and she's into other art, as she's thinking about even growing into recycled paper, we talk about that, which is very interesting. I never heard that as kind of an art form and an interest, but we really targeted on her music and the style of music. She has definitely taps into different styles of music, different inspirations that inspire her to create her music. She's a singer songwriter. She has a website out there. So her Gracie, and then her last name is C-A-G-G-I-A-N-O. FloridaAno.com is where you can find her. Also on Instagram, TikTok, etc. She's out there performing at venues in the Kansas City area. So if you are near there, it's a great opportunity to meet another FSHD person of our community that is doing what they do, what they're meant to do, despite the obstacles, perhaps, right? And we talk about those too in this conversation, what she has to overcome to perform her music, record her music, and so forth. And I think it's inspiring to all of us how she does that. So if you're in the Kansas City area, I'd love to have you swing through and see if you can find some of those venues to watch Gracie perform her art. And it's so much fun to talk to musicians for me, because selfishly, I can't do that. I always wish, I guess I could be that person that could pick up a guitar and like create music and like great lyrics, because music inspires me as it does so many others. And it can really tap into how you're feeling in a certain time or day or point in your life. And it's like music can get you through a lot of things. And so I admire musicians that give back to the community. And to me, it's a vulnerable art to put yourself out there to say, I created this, the way they sing, the way they perform, or the way they play an instrument, et cetera. And to put it out there, to share that with the world, to me is courageous. And so I kind of feed off of that. So this conversation was a lot of fun. FSHD Radio at FSHDSociety.org is the email address. So if you have another artist that you'd like me to talk to, or an inspirational story that we can share with the world, because this podcast really to me is beyond just our FSHD community. It is for the whole world community. I think it can inspire a lot of people of what others are doing, regardless of a muscle wasting disease that we do not want in our life. But since we have it, how do we do what we want to do anyway? And we talk about that with Gracie here on this conversation that I have with her. And some of the advice she gives, especially keying on the last question, is an interesting point of view that I have not seen. And I wish I have myself more often, because I think it would have helped me through some tough times. And I hope it will continue through my tough times, having that fresh in my mind. And I think it'll help you as well. So, without further ado, let's get on with the conversation with Gracie. Power the Path Forward by joining the FSHD Society Torchbearer Community, a passionate and committed group of monthly donors who carry the torch for our mission with their year-round support. Together, Torchbearers have provided more than $60,000 annually to help fuel groundbreaking research, empower advocacy, and strengthen community programs that bring us closer to effective treatments and ultimately a cure. Why give monthly? It's an affordable way to contribute what works for you while making a year-round impact. Your giving provides the society the reliable, ongoing support that strengthens our ability to serve individuals and families living with FSHD. And in addition to helping ensure that no one faces FSHD alone, Torchbearers receive exclusive updates and special access to leadership webinars. Become a Torchbearer today. Donate securely online and choose to give monthly. Together, we'll light the way to a cure. So as promised, today we have a singer-songwriter. Gracie's with us. Welcome, Gracie. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, I love singer-songwriters. I gravitate to that kind of music selfishly myself. So I love having musicians on. They've been on in the past with our show, and it's just always intriguing to me because it's so creative. It's also something I said this to you before I hit record. It's like, I can't do that stuff. So I find it very fascinating, those that can sing well, write their own music. I give you guys a lot of credit, the artists in that realm. So first, before we get too far down into the music and like what you do, tell us a little about yourself. Like, where are you from? Maybe your FSHD story.
Yeah, so my name is Gracie Caggiano. I'm originally from Central Florida. I grew up on the east side of Orlando. But now I'm based in Kansas City, Missouri. I moved out here for almost 5 years ago, I think, to attend grad school. But I'm a musician, a creative person. I love looking at the world through a creative lens, and I love being curious and just experiencing my life and even my disease that way. That's a little bit about me.
So that's quite a geographical move, right? Going from Central Florida area up to Kansas City area. And you said that was more for a grad school. That's kind of what drew you that direction. Are you are you still in grad school?
No, I graduated almost 3 years ago.
Okay.
Now it'll be 3 years ago next month, which is
Nice.
crazy to me how the time flies.
But you decided to stay in that area.
I did. I think there's just something attractive about the Kansas City area. As someone who grew up in Orlando, which is just full of traffic and tourists and Disney World, which is cool. And I think Orlando is really awesome. It has a lot of its own culture. But when I moved to Kansas City, it felt like there was so much more like independently motivated art and people doing things not because they were expecting a mass audience, but because it's what they wanted to do. So there are a lot of like
Like that.
indie galleries and indie venues, and I just enjoy the community of independent artists here.
It is interesting that you kind of use that term indie, independent. It's almost like people understand what their why is, like why they do something, and they lead with that. If it's successful, it doesn't matter to them as in like monetary or monetary dollars and cents and all that. It's more probably like they love it, right? They just love expressing themselves, and they're comfortable with doing that in Kansas City more than I can kind of see what you're saying. I mean, Orlando is probably driven a little bit by the tourist world and Mickey Mouse and all that, and that's great. But you're right; you probably want to break free from maybe that area or that vibe and get something more independent. So, Kansas City kind of seems like was your niche, right? Like kind of a comfortable spot to kind of grow your art there. Is there any other art that you do besides music, songwriting?
No, I'm primarily a musician, but it feels like doing a lot of different art forms because I will write like singer-songwriter style music, but I also compose classical music and like chamber music. I do orchestral commissions and like production work. So it takes up a lot of time and there's a lot of different skill sets. I would love to get back into some things that I enjoyed doing when I was younger. I used to love drawing and painting. And I would love to learn how to make recycled paper, but I haven't gotten
Make
there yet.
recycled paper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Now that's fascinating. That is new. That is new here. We have not heard someone interested in that. Why? Why that particular niche?
Oh, well, I think it can be like special to think about taking something that otherwise might just go to the landfill and making it into something that can be used again. I also think that you can customize your paper if you make it. I have a lot of like dried flower petals that I would love to put in paper or
Nice.
handwrite song lyrics on, anything of that sort.
No, I definitely get guilty if I throw away too much things I know I should be recycling. Like the like even down to the paper I use when I'm doing show notes, like it's the backside of something else. Like I'm so okay, I'm gonna reuse it again until I can't anymore, then I'm gonna throw that in my recycler and please recycle my stuff, like wherever it goes, whatever company does its thing. So yeah, I can kind of appreciate that. But it's not as your style of talking about that recycled paper is like there's like a beauty to it, right? More of an art side to it. That's interesting. That's interesting. But music has kind of led the way, right? For you most of your life, it sounds like you're really involved. I mean, that's a lot of aspects of music beyond just singing, songwriting, production, classical, different genres. So where do you draw your inspiration from? Like the types of music you decide to work with or be about.
This is proving to be such a hard question to answer every time someone asks me to answer it, because I feel like it's not simple. It is like the things that I listen to, like the other artists I listen to, and maybe was inspired by when I was younger, but it's also like just existing and also listening to artists that are in my local community. I feel like that's some like a conversation that I've had with a couple people recently in Kansas City is like, historically, you look at songwriter movements and there are these people who are all inspired by each other, and that's what ends up creating like a distinct sound for say like the 60s or the 70s. It's because people are listening to each other right now, and so I try to keep that in mind as well. But I do love artists like Jeff Buckley. I love Fiona Apple. I love Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, so there's some similarities there with those artists, or at least, you know, the type of music. Like, I think I kind of get what you're saying too, to the maybe the effect of that you don't want to necessarily be pigeonholed to say, well, this is like my genre, right? It's especially when you're talking about things from classical to maybe a little more singer songwriter, and that kind of genre is different in general. So you're right. I don't want to, you know, say I'm this, and this is kind of where I put myself in like a category. It seems like it's kind of like whatever flows in those given times, whatever inspires you, right?
Right. And I think the thing that's interesting about that too is like, no matter where the inspiration is coming from, and I don't think this is true only for myself, but for like a lot of musicians and artists, like you can be creating anything in any genre, but there's still something distinct about it being you creating it, or about me being the one creating it. Like the voice is still there. I don't know, you look at artists, like we'll just throw Taylor Swift out there. She's made a lot of different things over the course of her career, but it's all Taylor. It's all her voice. Like there's something about it being her creating it. So I try not to like let myself get stuck and worry about not having a sound.
Right. The sound is what it is, right? And then those that gravitate to it will. And you kind of stay, coin this word that's being probably maybe overused, but kind of stay authentic to whatever you're creating. And it's not necessarily like probably reinventing yourself. I mean, you're still you. It's not like you're completely changing. Because to your point, using Taylor Swift as an artist, I'm not a Swiftie. Those that may know or know not me. I don't really follow her music too much. But what I can appreciate about her very much so is, A, I think she's a really smart musician, as in like even like to the side of like business. I mean, there's a business side of this, right? She's a very smart businesswoman, in my opinion, to enter a genre of music. I think it was more country. She kind of started more of her kind of in, and then she kind of used that to kind of make a name to some degree or get some attention, and then is definitely moved, in my opinion, far from that genre of music and kind of has created her own style. Maybe some might say is more pop-like, but I would venture she could probably tackle any type of music and be successful at it because of the path that she's chosen. So it's interesting. You have FSHD, and that's partly why you're on, along with so many of us that like listen and watch the show. And I always ask a little bit of that, you know, where did FSHD start for you? You know, diagnosis, or like, you know, where were you in your life when you realized, okay, there's something not going on here correctly with my body, something's up?
It was pretty early for me, and it was kind of strange because FSHD does not run in my family.
Okay.
No one in my family has it. But as a child, I was clumsy. There were maybe signs when I was born, but of course, not having any family history, it was like not really an explanation for some of the things that my mom was seeing. I was misdiagnosed with something called Sprengel's deformity, which is like a bone deformity where the scapula doesn't come down fully.
Okay.
So it's like it looks really similar to like the winging scapula that we can have in FSH. I was misdiagnosed when I was like 6 or 7. And then my mom, being a nurse and being the intuitive mother that she was like, this is not correct. And took me for a second opinion. And I was diagnosed with FSH after having genetic testing done. like shortly before my 10th birthday.
Okay.
So it's been a
It's
part
been a
of
bit.
my life for over half of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what has been the changes that have happened for you since you were diagnosed? Obviously, the scapular winging and things you had early on, obviously that doesn't go away. I'm definitely someone that has that issue as well. As the progression of the disease, what has that been looking like as you're getting older?
Well, it was kind of rapid at first. I mean, I was diagnosed. I dealt a lot with having hyperlordosis, and I was walking for a bit, but I got my first power chair when I was 12.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Mostly to help with like long distances and to like take the stress off of my body, but I really did not want to use it at first. I was like, no, this is embarrassing.
Right. Right.
And then by the time I was 15, I was not walking at all. So that was a fast
That is a fast
progression
progression, for
that
sure.
happened for me. And then since then, it's been kind of like mild progression, but I noticed like the landmarks of change. Having trouble like transferring, or like maybe my hands are weaker, maybe like pronouncing certain words with like a P or a B gets more difficult. I notice it in a lot of small ways, but yeah, the biggest change of not being able to walk happened pretty early in
Yeah.
my, yeah.
Well, and I don't blame you. I don't think anybody would to say, I didn't want to get in that power chair right away because like it just for me, it seems like the common thought process for me personally and others I've talked to, it's like it almost feels like defeat. Like I'm just giving in to this, so now I have to use this power equipment. And then I quickly hear people say, but it gave me freedom, once I decided, yeah, I got to use this. Did you feel similar?
Yeah, I think it took me a little while to understand that, but like when
Oh,
being
you're
so
15. I mean,
young,
that's
yeah,
young. Yeah.
I think there's like also there was such an emphasis, I think, from my doctors that I know that what they were trying to do is give me hope by saying, we could have a treatment for you in the next 5 years. And that, of course, is not realistic. They were
Yeah.
excited, I think, about a lot of research that was like new research at the time, like hearing about like the DUX4 gene. Like I was diagnosed around the time that a lot of like research was being done to like explain the cause of the disease. And I think just like there was just a lot of shame around using a mobility aid. And I think that if my doctors, if my family was instead like encouraging me to do something that was gonna relieve pain and make it easier for me to have that quality of life and to like participate in things without like straining myself trying to walk, then I wouldn't have had so much resistance. Yeah.
What was, how does it then translate as you do your music when you perform? I'm sure it looks a little different when you're recording something, studio setting, etc. But now you're visible. People want to watch you perform the music, and then you're in front of them. You play guitar. I know that's at least one of the instruments I know that you play. I'm sure there's others. I'd love to know that list too. But how does that look like? What are there adaptions, like on stage? Is there even getting on stage? Like, what does that all look like?
Yeah, so a lot of places that I go play, it is really interesting being the person in the local community that like my existence in this space proves to people, or like maybe not even proves, but just like informs people that disabled people make music, because there's just like it's just not a part of the infrastructure. Like ramp, there's no ramps to stages, but there are a few venues where they'll provide a ramp for me because I'm like a regular there now. other venues. I have a portable ramp, like a 6-foot ramp that I keep in my trunk. And I'll have like the sound guy come out to my car and carry it inside, or someone will help me do that. So I can navigate getting on the stage. My performance is, I would say it's adapted. I mean, I don't perform with a typical body, and so it, it has to be. My singing even is adapted in a way. But one thing that I like to do is to play an alternate tunings on the guitar.
Okay.
It just gives me more like creative freedom and like allows me to create more interesting harmonies without like straining my hands. I find it really difficult to like switch chord shapes, so a lot of my music is built around like similar chord shapes, just like sliding them up and down the fretboard to make that easier. And then I get ambitious and try to do things that are harder than that. But yeah, that's like a big adaptation that I've made to my performance style. And that also informs my writing style. As far
as it kind of molds it, right? I mean, it shapes, it's part of its foundation then.
Yeah, yeah. I like to call it embodied creation, or like embodied songwriting. It's not like just writing for an instrument. I'm writing with my body in mind, and I think that everyone should do that, actually. Not just disabled people, but like people have different like skill sets on different instruments, or like idiosyncrasies, like things that they do that no one else does. I think that we should write for people and not instruments.
Yeah, do you feel like that sometimes is that kind of, man, I hate to say it like this, but is that where kind of bad music may come from? Like people stretching their ability past maybe what they're, what's in their wheelhouse, right? Like, man, I've had bands that I've followed, and then all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute, what just happened with this last album? I'm like, I appreciate you trying to be creative, but man, I think this kind of missed the mark for me. Or maybe it gets other fans, I don't know, but it feels like kind of like stick with what you're really good at, right? Or understand that. But does that then equal some restrictions in your creativity?
I don't know. That's a hard question. I feel the question of what is bad music, or is it just music that I don't like?
Right.
I find that a really difficult question. And maybe it's not like writing outside of the skill set, but maybe not having like enough time. I feel like a big symptom of music that misses the mark is that there's a lot of pressure to continue putting music out like nonstop. And I think it's really like a lack of life experience.
Yeah, that makes sense, because you're drawing from that. I mean, you're drawing from the experiences in life, and you have to experience life in between your creative times to feel inspired to write something. And the more relatable, in my opinion, that music can be to other people, even if it's just the sound of it, not necessarily the lyrics of it, the more you're going to get people to be into it, right? To just relate. There's been many times where I've listened to a piece of music that someone's created, and I'm like, did they meet me? Because that's pretty spot on. What they're saying is like really relatable, you know? Have you ever had that reaction from people that you've written, you know, music that you're like inspired by whatever that moment was? You write your song, you perform it, or someone listens to it. Have you ever gotten feedback where someone's like, that song really hit me?
Yes, it does happen occasionally. And it's really like, it's really emotional.
Yeah.
I try to be vulnerable. I shouldn't even say try. I am vulnerable in my music. It's hard not to be. And it feels natural, which makes it really scary to perform publicly sometimes.
Right.
But I do try to like poetically explain my disability experience. And I have had people come up to me after shows and say, you know, I know this is about your disability, but thank you for performing that, because I've been dealing with, let's say it's like, they have to get knee surgery soon, or like, dealing with like hair loss or something, and it's like my body is changing too, and it's really scary and gives me anxiety, but I try to see the meaningfulness in it.
Sure.
So it's really, it's relatable. Really beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. When you, because those are people obviously you've never met maybe up to that point, and then there they are, right? And this now it's this common thing that you've created for them to help them get through something possibly. And that might not have been your intent when you wrote it. It might have been to help you get through something. But in essence, as soon as you share it with the world, I think that it opens up the opportunity that that's going to impact other people just as positive or more. It almost has this like times whatever effect, right? Times how many people that hear it, that could have the effect on those people. So clearly creativity drives your inspiration or your motor to continue to create. It's not, oh, well, I hit it big, you know? Right. I mean, at least that's what it feels like. I mean, if you do, you do. As in, like, I'm talking like Taylor Swift here, right? I think it feels like your why is like, I want to just share my creativity, as you said, like embodied music and like a different form or how it's created. What would happen if a large artist, let's say a Taylor Swift type, asks you to come and tour with them?
I would figure out how to make it happen because it would be the experience of a lifetime.
Right.
I think about touring a lot as somebody with a disability and the conversation that I wish the industry was having is how to make that possible. I have the privilege of playing with artists who come to Kansas City on tour. I just played with some artists from LA last week. And it's like DIY level because that's where I'm at. You know, we're independent artists. We're making it happen and sharing music with the resources that we have. And I just think to myself, I don't know if I could do that. Like, I don't know if it's sustainable. Like, the impact that touring has on your health and your body, because you're putting all your energy into a show one night and then the next day you're driving like 6 to 10 hours to the next location. Like, it's just, it sounds extremely exhausting, but I would love to do it.
Right. And the disease itself already exhausts us, right? It already does that to us on a regular basis. And then you add the stress of travel and all those things. Do you think though, okay, if it's a tour, even if you're doing a set and then maybe you're going to do another one either later that day or in a couple of days, does the idea though of going live, does that give you that energy? Does it like kind of give you a injection of that dopamine boost, you know, that like kick? Because I've not performed live music. The only thing I've ever done is something similar of this like podcasty stuff live. And I've always got that little bit of I call it the juice. You get a little bit like, this is interesting. It's kind of like scary because something could go wrong, but you got to roll with it. It's like, it is what it is. Kind of put us in your mind, like as you're going onto the stage, like that moments before and then right maybe in those moments, those first notes are coming out.
It is incredibly exciting. I don't know that I always feel nervous as much as I do, just like ready to share what I've created and also ready to have an experience. Cause like you're saying, like in a live setting, it's about the room. It's about that moment being that moment and never being able to recreate that moment in the same place with the same people, with the same songs, with the same mistakes. And it's just exhilarating. I love being able to do it.
That's interesting.
Thrilling.
The way you described it that way, because that is so true. I've never seen, like, I've heard some of my friends have like went from like one city maybe to another, or even another, and almost follow the band or follow the group, and then see a couple different shows, and they've said, you know, one is totally different than the other. And I think you're right, because of the room, the other people that are there. It's not necessarily the music they're playing. It could be the exact same, but the set could be the same. But it's everything else, right? There's all those variables that change and like shift the whole emotional set of the room.
Mm-hmm. dressing up, and the sunflower at dusk, posture of a petal that has yet to be plucked. Will you still love my body when I become myself most intensely? I want you to desire every form of me. Trace my contorted spine back to the beginning of time. I am every incarnation that my body has been. Please save some adoration. I am an angel into my atrophy. I want you to desire.
Would feel that I would get anxiety again. I've only like can relate this with a little bit of public speaking that I've done. And there's a brief moment where I'm like thinking to myself right before I go out there, I'm like, what if they don't get it? Like, what if I don't get them? Like, what if I don't get them? You know what I mean? Like, get them, like get their attention, lock them in to understand what I'm trying to say or do. Do you ever get that little bit of a, what if they don't get it moment?
Yeah. I do, but I think statistically not everyone is going to get it.
Yeah.
And going in already knowing that, mm-hmm. you know, you're not going to get the whole room.
Yeah.
And it eases that anxiety because you don't have an unrealistic expectation. And mm-hmm. the people that do get it will, mm-hmm. you know, be the ones who come up to me after and say, thank you, I really needed this.
Yeah.
And so it's like, even if one person gets it, and I know statistically that at least one person in the room will get it. It's worth it to me. I think also just like being authentic and choosing to be authentic in that moment and against that anxiety in your brain saying, what if no one gets it? Like, that's the thing that gets people more. It's not always the music or what you're saying, but that you chose to get up there and do what you wanted to do and what you felt like you needed to do in that moment.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. You just push through. Someone once gave me the advice of, no, you don't got to get the whole room. You just need one. Just one person. If you influence the one person, like, you're good. Like that's really all you're trying to do. And clearly you do that. Gracie, in the way you perform and the music that you create, your creative style, or your process, how does that go? Like, how do you, I can't even quantify the question because my, my brain doesn't think like yours. Like that creative, like what triggers you to go, ooh, I got this song. Is it a melody? Is it something you see or experience? Is it a mix of both or all those?
It's a mixture. I used to say that I was a lyrics first person, mm-hmm. but that is proving to not be true anymore. Mm. Sometimes I really do have a melody that comes to mind first, but it is like, you can't write anything. You can't write lyrics. You can't write melodies without paying attention to the world around you. And so I think just like being present and observing the world around me and being inside my body and talking to other people, that's what inspires me. And then eventually I'll just have an idea, like a song idea, or somebody will give me a prompt and I'll be like, oh wait, I already have all of the images for this. Like, it is also just really important to make a practice of trying to write even when you're not inspired. And I know like a lot of artists have like half written ideas, and it really does change you to like pull out a half written song and try to finish it. Mm. And then you end up writing like one of the best things you've ever written.
Interesting. Yeah. No, that's interesting because you hear like people get like writer's block and things like that, and they have to get away from it. I do that with other things in my life, just in problem solving, or if I'm kind of too stuck on something, I'm like, I got to get away from this for a minute and then kind of rethink it from a different perspective that maybe will come to me later. And it's interesting that that process happens even in songwriting. I always had this like, I guess, misconception that, well, once you plop down and start writing, it flows out of you like water. Not necessarily.
Sometimes it does. And that's an indescribable feeling. It feels like you're not even writing. And I've written a lot of songs that way. That's what artists would call like the gift. And there's actually a really good book that any artist listening to this podcast should read. It's called The Gift by Lewis Hyde. But there is that feeling that you get sometimes that like something has just been given to you. It is like, even if you don't have any sort of like religious belief, it feels divine. You're like, there is an entity bigger than me. And it just gave me this song. But a lot of the times it's just the idea that's given to you. And then you really have to labor for it. But I also find that sometimes the solution is really simple, as like looking at something in your room and you're like, oh, right, all I need to do is write a lyric about like this plant that's in my room.
Could be just that simple. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You use the term when you said like you get like a prompt from people, and then you use the term image, you know, when describing your writing. So then is music visual?
I think it can be. It can be. For me, it is. My lyrics tend to be very image heavy. I use a lot of imagery in my work, and I think it's part of that, like paying attention to the world around you. Like, I'm collecting images because that is part of my way of being and moving through the world. Is seeing things, and I'll have like images from childhood or like images from last week or something, and think about like for example, the song prompt that I'm referring to is that somebody gave me the song prompt of Instant Transformation, which is something that I don't really like believe in. I think that everything is gradual change, and then you notice things, and that's where the instant transformation is. It's just that like landmark of change.
Okay.
But when somebody gave me that, I was thinking about gradual change, and I thought about like the ways that, you know, where I grew up in Florida, there used to be orange groves, and now it's like stumps or cleared land because they've been cut down. So, like, that would be an example of an image, and you know, it becomes one line in the song, but it is for me an
An image in
image
your head.
that's, yeah.
And I think people would probably agree with us, right? That, I mean, when they even listen to music, they probably have visualization of what the person's saying or what they're, and it'll look different to everybody in a lot of cases, and like even how it relates to them. It is fascinating how I think how we tap into our other senses, even if it's music, you're listening to it, but I think it just taps into a lot of other things or even memories. When have you ever been in the midst of, if it's recording a song, or probably even more importantly, even live, which can be more difficult. Let's say you are singing a song that kind of draws a lot of emotion out of you. How do you control not getting then emotional where you can't hit that next note or get that next line out? I always have thought of like, how does an artist do that? Like, what part of their brain kind of just says, no, I gotta, I'm singing this now. I'll cry about it later. It just feels like that they push it off almost. And I've always admired that because I don't know if I have that ability.
It's tough. I've had a few of those moments, but I think a lot of artists have spent so much time with the song that, you know, we have our space to feel the emotion outside of performing. But also, I personally love when an artist gets so emotional that they don't perform it perfectly because it's so real. And it makes me want to cry more than I already wanted to cry before. So, yeah, I think it's also just, again, like being inside your body and having practiced singing so much before or performing so much before that you just understand how your body feels. And like as a singer, I'm thinking, okay, what shape does my throat need to be, and where does the resonance need to go inside my body? And there are things that you can do, like if you start to sense like, oh, my throat's gonna clench, you just try to relax and like open your throat so that you get the resonance that you need. It is kind of like being in a constant state of meditation, because if you're not aware of what your body is doing, that's where you clench or like miss a note. But again, like make room for the imperfection. It's real, it's authentic, and yeah.
And I think that's why people want to see live music. I know I do. Like, I don't want to hear you replay me the album. Like, I want you, or the recorded piece. Like, I want to hear what this feels like right now, like how you are feeling right now, you know? And when I hear artists like even change it a little bit or put a different twist on it, I really appreciate that. You know, I think that's why I'm there. Like, I want to be inspired by that like flow of like how the room feels, so they're making it different. Or maybe they take someone else's music, like a cover, and they put their own spin on it. I find that remarkable as well. Have you ever had that? Have you ever done that? Take like a cover of something else and kind of put your own spin on it.
Yeah, I don't do enough covers, and I've been thinking about that a lot. But I have done a few in the past, and there was one that I did a little over a year ago at a show. It was in December, and so I did Joni Mitchell's River.
Okay, that's a good song.
Yeah, but I'm not super confident in my piano abilities, and so I found an alternate tuning on the guitar that I can play it easily on guitar. And I got to play with some friends, so I had like a string trio and a saxophone and drums, and I put a section in the middle of the song where we could just like live in this space and like be dramatic, and that's not in the original, but it felt like it was true to the energy. Yeah, it was really special.
Nice. That sounds great. You didn't record that, did you? Is it out there?
No,
Dang
I
it.
wish. I think
Yeah.
about it all
Got
the
my interest
time.
on that
Like,
one.
I need
Yeah.
to record a studio version of that. We tried to record the
Yeah.
live version and it did not work
Didn't
out,
work. Oh, man.
unfortunately.
Yeah. That's sometimes right. Like you can't even, you might not even be able to recreate it necessarily. However, it is, yeah. Like I mentioned, those are the real, that to me is the real musician right there, right?
Yeah.
The one, if it's somebody else's, fine. But the way you put your personal touch or twist on it, or even if it's your own music that you've written, and maybe that next time you perform it, it just is a little bit different. And I think that's okay, because I think that's the beauty in it all, to be that creative.
I like to think that a song has a life and a recording is like a photograph. So it's like a snapshot of what it was at that point in time. But if you take a live recording like 2 years later, it might sound slightly different. In the same way that if you take a photo 2 years from now, you might not look that drastically different, but you might look a little bit different or have a different haircut or I think songs are the same way and they're influenced by the people who play them, or the places that they're played, and yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Man. So what's in the future? Is there as we'll probably be releasing this probably sometime in May, so around that time, like early summer, summertime-ish, are you looking then to do some performances in your area or somewhere else for that matter?
Yeah, I have several performances lined up. In May, I have one on Sunday, May 3rd, at a venue called Skate Bar. There's one May 14th at Record Bar, which is like I'll be playing a mini set. That's a benefit concert for a nonprofit called Heartland Song Network.
Nice.
On the 16th, I'm doing a show at a bookstore with a touring artist called Norma Dream. We'll be at Turnsoul Books for like an early show around 4 p.m.
Nice.
But
Nice.
what I'm looking forward to most in May is Manor Fest. Manor Records is a local like nonprofit record label, and they throw this massive local music festival every May. So I'll be playing Manor Fest on May
Nice.
23rd. Yeah.
Okay. That sounds like a substantial festival to be a part of then.
Yeah, there's usually like 60
Holy cow.
local artists. It's over the course of 2 weekends.
Wow.
It's so cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's nice. It sounds similar to like here in my Milwaukee area. We have a thing called, they call it Summerfest, and there's up and coming artists, there's artists that have been there and back. Maybe they should, some, maybe it's like maybe you've been around too long, but they're, there's a lot of artists, there are a lot of artists, and then they claim it's the largest in the world. I don't know if that's true anymore, but yeah, it stretches over. It used to stretch over, I think, like a 2 week span every day, and then now they think they've chopped it up to like more like Thursday through Sunday, 2 or 3 weekends in a row or something like that. Yeah, it sounds similar to that. It's
Cool.
yeah, it's cool. You should see if you can get to Milwaukee and perform at Summer.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be great. Let me know, because I'll line up some people. Like, here, we got to go see this person. So one of the last questions I got for you, if not the last question, is like those that have this lovely disease, right? This great FSHD that we have, and it makes us adapt. It makes us have to try to push through or battle, as I sometimes put it. And there's some that are probably listening that are either younger, maybe they're a little older too, but they're recently diagnosed, and like they might have had thoughts of like, this is what I thought I was going to be doing at some point in my life, but now I have this diagnosis, and you're proof that you had an idea to do this, music, etc. You have FSHD, and went, okay, then I'm just going to adapt. I'm going to do it anyway. But what advice would you give to those people, like that kind of push through it, or just advice to like do it anyway?
I would say one, it's okay to grieve your body when you're feeling upset about it. but find ways to celebrate your body, to make space for your pain. Don't think that you have to overcome your pain if you're feeling bad. Just feel bad. And when you're feeling good, then you can do the thing that you want to do. I think that that's a huge part, is like, don't think that you have to overcome. We're not overcoming. We're not making the disease go away. That would be miraculous, but it's not real. And instead of focusing on overcoming, focus on creating a new vision for your life that makes space for you to live in this body and to still enjoy it.
Nice. That's the most unique advice I've heard. I love it. Right, because it's like, it just is going to feel like a barrier, I think, for a lot of people. I know it did for me. I'm sure it did for you, and maybe still does for all of us as we kind of go through. I love what you're saying there. It makes a lot of sense to me. It's a definite like turn of the viewpoint on how we see things to where, maybe it isn't always we have to just battle or overcome. Right. Maybe we just kind of embrace what it is in this moment and go, well, I'm going to do it then like this. And I think that's where adaption lives. I think then that's once I think we figure out how we can still do what we love and like hit those goals, that things we want to achieve and things we want to do. And I think once we do that, then there is that freedom piece, as we talked about with power equipment, even, right? Like there's that freedom piece. Like I can still do this. Like, right. There's nothing wrong with our minds. Our body might not want to cooperate, but you can still be creative, like you've shown us. So it's exciting. It's exciting that that kind of advice you give. I think that is inspirational for sure.
Yeah, I think another piece is be careful not to make yourself the problem if you're running into a barrier. Like as a wheelchair user, I run into a lot of structural barriers. I have to be careful not to get negative thinking about my disability. Like, I'm not the problem. This is a part of human diversity. It's the structural barrier that's the problem. And you get frustrated at in society, not yourself.
Yeah. That's a great point of view. Man, I just wrote that down. Yeah. I'm not the problem. Right. Like, please, help me help you kind of thing. Yeah. Right. I mean, and it's proof positive that you're getting on stage. You bring your own ramp, for God's sake, to any means necessary to get you on there to perform. I'm excited to see how your May and June and all the things that you're going to be about in the next upcoming months. Love to circle back with you maybe in like the fall or winter to kind of see how you're doing and how things are evolving. And if there's any more new music that we can kind of touch into. If people want to find out more about you though, Gracie, where can they do that? Where are the best places for them to find you?
Yeah, I'm most active on Instagram. You can follow me at Gracie Caggiano. And maybe we can
spell that on the links. Screen. yeah, for sure.
I'm most active on Instagram. I'm also kind of active on TikTok. I have a website, graciecaggiano.com. I'm also on any streaming platforms and Bandcamp.
Nice. Bandcamp. I know that very well. Awesome. Thank you, Gracie, for joining us. We'll definitely have you back. I'll be in touch, but thanks for sharing your music and your talent with us today. I wish you the best of luck in your performances. Do they still say break a leg or no? That's not a thing anymore.
People say that to me sometimes. Yeah.
It's supposed to be a good luck thing. I don't know how that happened, but that's how it is. So thanks again, Gracie.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
That is awesome to have Gracie on. She is to me, musicians in general are very inspiring. And those that have to overcome things to still perform their music and like share their talent with the world and the fact they are willing to do that. I'm sure Gracie has possibly gotten some negative, feedback from people, the way sometimes people can be a little bit mean, right? And there's no need for us to venture that direction. This is about a positive conversation. And I think the positivity that she gives, so many things and advice and like nuggets of inspiration. I hope that some of you will hit the playback a little bit there, especially on that last question. that, you know, we're not the problem, that, you know, pain is inevitable within this. It is, I think, kind of her messaging. So it's kind of like move with it more than resist it, and like absorb in those bad days, you know, that this is going to not be great right now. And like, I really feel like too, she's saying like, maybe then that's not the moment that you start doing the most inspirational work, right? When you're feeling those negative things. However, sometimes for me, I like listening to sad songs because they make me feel better. It's weird. I know, but those that really know me know I am weird, and it's, I kind of like that. And I didn't ask, hey, do you have a great sad song that I can like tune into? Because I'll find it. I'll definitely dip into more of Gracie's music. And yes, Gracie, Caggiano.com. That is Caggiano. Find her on Insta, find her on TikTok, Bandcamp, all the places probably you can find music. I'm sure you can locate her music. If you're in the Kansas City area or willing to kind of like see where she'll be at on those dates here in May, depends on when we have this episode released, find it, find those shows, support her for sure. Another person in our FSHD community. I think it would mean a lot, right? If we kind of, showed up to a concert, right? Showed up to one of those venues and support Gracie and her exciting music and her career. She keeps blazing forward, and we'll circle back with her after the you know, usually it's like the warm months, the artists are out there performing and things, and then they kind of, you know, maybe have some time to record more new music. So I'd love to see and touch base with her as she's like moving through her career and life and like music she's creating. If you have other maybe musical artists or bands or maybe artists in general that you'd like me to interview, I'd love to hear about them. FSHD radio at fshdsociety.org is the email address. Send me that information. In fact, I had a little while back, another guest on the show actually plugged another person that I should talk to, Michael King out there, and he sent me a link of like, you got to check this person out, which I did. And it was inspiring to kind of read the story about someone doing the thing they do in their life that is their thing, regardless, even though they have FSHD. Very inspiring. And so thank you, Michael, for that plug. And you know, there's that avenue. I'd love to have those people on, because that to me is really what this show is about. FSHD Straight Talk is about the communities, about the people involved. If you have inspiring caretakers, even family members that are in the fight with you, and you want to bring them on the show with you, or you want them to talk about things, or yeah, I want to know who these people are that I think inspire you, because they're going to inspire others. So FSHD radio at fshdsociety.org. Thanks again to my guests. Thanks again to FSHD Society for help bringing this show to yet another episode and another conclusion. Thank you for listening. Thanks for watching the show. You've been listening to FSHD Straight Talk.